Welcome to another edition of the Tribal Theocrat Live Show. Seems like just yesterday we did this. In fact, it was 2 days ago. Here we are again live with a bonus show. We typically do only two shows a month, the first and third Saturdays of each month, but we've got a special guest on tonight who'll be here in about 15 minutes. And he's from the West Coast, so we pushed back an hour and changed the day. We're going to accommodate him tonight because he's a special guy with some interesting views on media psyops, and we'll discuss that here shortly. For now, what I want to do is take 15 minutes, 10-15 minutes to discuss a issue that I get emailed about quite a bit. And the question is, well, it isn't a question, it's a statement. And that statement is that Christianity is Jewish. And it usually comes from white nationalists, people who are our kinsmen and who are awake to the fact that we do have an enemy. And we're grateful for that. But unfortunately, the secular white nationalists don't like Christianity too much. And they're fond of saying that Christianity is not the answer because it's Jewish. And I'm going to try to dispel a few of these myths surrounding that claim tonight. And I'll turn this into a Kinism FAQs section. And while this one isn't specifically about Kinism, it's an objection from white nationalists about Christianity. And we believe that Christianity and Kinism are one. And so this will be the first of the installments of Kinism FAQs. First, let's talk about this claim that Christianity was Jewish. It usually takes two or three parts. Jesus was Jewish, or we'll hear that Christianity springs from Judaism, and then there'll be some ethical objections, which amounts to these are the things that I think Christianity teaches, and Jews would love those kind of teachings, so they can't be truly unique. They're just Jewish. So I want to first start off with this objection that Jesus was Jewish. This is a claim you hear a lot. Unfortunately, it's even heard by Christians. It's even comes from their bumper stickers. My boss is a Jewish carpenter, for example. That's a ridiculous bumper sticker. Jesus was of the Hebrew or Israelite tribe of Judah. And the English designation for the tribe of Judah was Jew, at least for a time. And when the Edomites converted to Judaism during the Maccabean Revolt, however, we see Jew being used as a designation for those living in the geographical area of Judea. Notice that Edomite King Herod was called a Jew. This is obviously a geographic, not a tribal or ethnic designation. And today we've got other groups of Jews who, like the Edomites, have nothing to do with either the tribe of Judah or the old geographic of the old geographic area of Judea. We're thinking here of Ashkenazi Jews, who are the Jews we think of when we hear the word Jew. This is the dominant Jewish group in Israel, Europe, America. They are the ones who control our media, schools, and government. Think of the scummy whiner Abe Foxman, or legislative snakes like Senator Dianne Feinstein, or media moguls like Gerald Levin and Summer Redstone. These are what we think of today as Jews. And that's why you can find articles online entitled things like "Jesus was not a Jew." What this means is not that Jesus was not an Israelite or a Judahite, or that he wasn't from the land of Judah, but that Jesus is not from the same tribe of these Zionist enemies who I just named, called Jews. Nor was Jesus of Judaism, which leads to the next point, this criticism that Christianity springs from Judaism, so it must be Jewish. In short, no. The mistake here is to liken the Old Testament religion to Judaism, but rather the Old Testament religion, according to Christian theology, is Christocentric. It's Christian. The laws are Christian. The doctrine is Christian. Now, there is indeed a covenant administration change during the New Testament times with the completion of Christ's sacrificial ministry, where we see some laws and ordinances and rituals ceasing because they prefigured Christ's earthly ministry. The nation of Israel is best seen, as the Westminster Confession of Faith puts it, as a church under age. So think of it as the Old Testament is the church under age, the New Testament is the church of age. Now, between the writing of these two testaments, Old and New, during the Babylonian exile, there was a wicked group among the exiled tribes, or some say perhaps a foreign tribe called the Edomites, and they developed an oral tradition which was contrary to the Old Testament, and which Jesus denounces as the tradition of the elders. You can see John chapter 5 and Mark chapter 7. This oral tradition began to be written down as the Talmud right around 70 AD when the temple was destroyed. And it continued to be written down and developed on into the 6th century. Now this Talmud, unlike the Bible, teaches anti-Christian, anti-Gentile doctrines such as Jewish supremacy, that you can lie to, steal from, and even kill a non-Jew with impunity. It justifies sexual perversions, teaches blasphemies about Jesus Christ, nasty things about his mother. So this is not the Old Testament. This is the authoritative religious text for Judaism, the Talmud. And this is why Jesus would say things like, "You heard it was said, but I say unto you." He was correcting these perverted Jewish, Judaistic, anti-Christian doctrines and accretions. One text in Matthew 23 or 24, I believe, he says, "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent her, or sent to her, how often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing." This is not a general evangelical call to all the sheep. He's criticizing the leaders. "I've wanted to come to your children, but you, leaders, weren't willing." He's railing against the Jewish Talmudic leaders here. The point is Judaism, therefore, is Talmudic. It's not biblical, and as such, it has nothing to do with Christianity, which is biblical. The point can't be emphasized enough that Christianity does not spring from Judaism. It's anachronistic to say that, but Judaism springs from hell and from the Talmud, which is an absolute perversion of the Old Testament and thus a denial of it. Jesus told the Pharisees, "If you believed Moses, which was part of the Old Testament, you would believe me." Yet they rejected him intensely, and they replaced the Old Testament's focus of worship of God through his mediator Christ with basically a worship of rabbis specifically and Jews generally. The Messiah of Christianity is Jesus, while the Messiah of Judaism is the self-worshipping Jewish people themselves. By the way, there's no Judeo-Christian tradition. That's insane, because the two are at enmity with each other. Let's deal with the ethical objections to Christianity that some of these folks have. Now, of course, these are misrepresentations of Christianity, but even if they were legit, I've always wondered about the standard used to judge these things. Most white nationalists who hate Christianity, they have an ethic that reduces to the will of the white man, or might makes right. They've got a penchant for the naturalistic fallacy, which is when you try to derive morality from nature. The Christian position quickly is that ethics come from an absolute, transcendent, yet personal God via divine revelation, and those ethics reflect his holy character. Here's one. One person writes, "We're told by churches there's no need to worry about anything. Just have faith in Jesus and make sure you pray and everything will be okay." Now, we can understand this objection because we face pretty hard times right now, and that solution won't get us anywhere. And unfortunately, some Christians do take that pietistic approach. But it's really wrong to say this is the teaching of Scripture. If you look at Jesus, for example, he did pray. He encouraged prayer, but he got after business. He drove the money changers from the temple. He even encouraged his followers to arm themselves with, at that time, the strongest weapons of the day. "Sell your coat and buy a sword," he says. So that one doesn't really hold. We're also told not to judge or prejudge, and that's a sin. So we hear this one a lot. It's a misrepresentation. Even Christians do this. It's sad to see it. But people will object that that's an idiotic and stupid doctrine. Well, unqualified, it is idiotic and stupid, because we have to make judgments all the time. But if they'll look closely at Scripture and read the passage, that the context is saying that be careful how you judge, because by that standard, you'll be judged. Jesus, for example, he did a lot of judging. He excoriated the Pharisees. And even in John 7:24, for example, says, don't judge by mere appearance, but make the right judgment. So Christian, do judge. We're supposed to judge. Love your enemies. Pray for your persecutors. Turn the other cheek. This sounds insane, according to some people. And this one is a little tougher because it comes from the Sermon on the Mount, and it seems like it's an absolute, unqualified ethic. But I want to read from a theologian, an apologist who's now with the Lord, Greg Bahnsen, says, Scripture is replete with illustrations of general truths whose precise qualifications are found only elsewhere. Indeed, the Sermon on the Mount is full of them. We deduce from turn the other cheek that we should presume it our duty to avoid practicing violence toward others unless Scripture qualifies further, as it does, concerning circumstances such as necessary self-defense or the just defense of others. He continues, we don't conclude from the unqualified form of the maxim turn the other cheek that there's no basis here whatsoever for asserting a prohibition on personal violence or vengeance. That's a good point. We have to take the entire Scripture together, and over we see self-defense as justified. Give up all your possessions. There's a text in Acts 4, the multitude which believed had one heart and one soul, and no man did say that any of those things which he possessed was his own, but they had all things in common. So people object Christianity can't be worth anything because it teaches this collective socialism stuff, which it doesn't. That text simply means, people, that the early Christians, they shared and they were generous. They didn't tear down their houses and create a commune. Look at the history of the church, the history of Christendom. When do you see socialism, the collective ownership of goods, emphasized and lived out? You don't. That's ridiculous. Scripture teaches private property rights. It also teaches altruism. Put God before your family and yourself. That's an objection to Christianity. We can't do that because we have to protect our family and ourselves. Well, this simply means that we should conduct self-government and family government according to and consistent with our religious worldview. Everyone does this. So replace God or Christianity with your highest ethical authority, beyond which there's no appeal, and you'll see that you do the same thing. It doesn't say neglect your family or neglect yourself and then chase after some irrational God. It says that when you pursue your own family and in self-interest, do so consistent with your religion. That's all that means. So I don't think it's a real criticism at all. There is a text where I think Jesus says, if any man come to me and hate not his father, mother, wife, and children, and brothers, sisters, yeah, even his own life, he can't be my disciple. And this is simply hyperbole that says, put me, not the Pharisees, first. And I think one last objection I hear a lot is that Christians are obsessed with Jew worship. They love Israel and they're Zionists and they think Jews are the chosen people of God. And I can't really fault this objection because it is true that most Christians do have some sort of special sentiment toward Jews. And it's not biblical. The Bible does not teach that Jews are God's chosen people. We've already talked about what Jew means today. There's no way anybody could ever make the case that people like Abe Foxman and Summer Redstone are God's chosen people, and so we should give them our money and so forth. But I'm happy to share the common cause of exposing the lies of the establishment. And we do have that common cause with white nationalists, but I'm sick of the senseless Christianity bashing by my fellow kinsmen. Many Christians are duped. Yes, they are. They're statist. They love public schools. They love the feds. They love the military, TV, Jews, Israel. They're not politically involved. When they are, they're politically insane. They're social Marxists. They love MLK. They think that tribalism and love for your own race is racist and evil. They believe lies about history. They employ practices that tear down family, etc., etc. But in many cases, they're useless. But in these areas, they're no different from your average bourgeois garden variety secularist. And these Christians are acting like fools in spite of their professed religion. And I'm sorry for that. Look at it like this. Does your average American care about the Constitution, the constitutional role of the federal government. No, he wants a nanny state to some degree. He wants health care or Social Security or big standing armies, the Federal Reserve, the income tax, IRS. He's happy with these things because he thinks that heavy taxes and huge federal departments are the price for civilization. But this is not what the Constitution teaches. It's not American. These folks are professing Americans, but they're lousy Americans. So there's the analogy. Don't chuck out America because of bad Americans. The abuse doesn't rule out the right use. I think you and I are good Americans, despite the majority who claim the name. TribalTheocrat.com is a Kinist website. I believe Kinism is true Christianity, and please interact with us. Judge us. We make mistakes, but not the mistakes of 99% of those who claim and trash our faith. Well, we'll take a brief music break, and we'll come right back with John Friend to discuss media psyops. We're back with Tribal Theocrat Live. And you can join the chat room if you have questions at tribaltheocrat.com. At the bottom of your browser, there's a tab called Tribal Theocrat Live. Click that and you can chat. And if you have a question, we can probably get to that later on. But without further ado, I'll bring on my guest, John Friend.
Hey, buddy. What's going on?
Hey, what's up, John?
Nothing. How you doing?
Good. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Excellent. Good to talk to you, man.
Yeah, nice to talk to you too, man. I, you know what? I got to admit, man, I've only listened to like one or two of your shows, but I'm going to start tuning in more often now. I think you're, I definitely like your message.
Oh, cool.
As far as Christian, I'm sick and I'm going to be straight up with you. I'm sick and tired of these people bashing Christianity.
Yeah, I've seen some of that over at your blog, and I've liked how you've come in and said just that, quit being anti-religious and bashing Christianity. But yeah, we do something a little bit different here. We've talked a little bit about conspiracies and anti-establishment stuff. I think that's probably the commonality that we have. We're trying to expose the lies of the establishment, and some of it's religious, some of it's just current events. And
sure.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Christian, I don't know if, I mean, I don't even mind saying this on the air, but I got to tell you, man, I really do think that these Christian identity guys got this stuff right.
Yeah, we can talk about that at the end. I didn't know what your religious background was. I saw some white nationalist stuff on your blog and CI, and I wasn't sure what you knew about us. We're called Kenists. We're basically the historical Christians who haven't bought into the MLK the social Marxist garbage.
Well, and good. I'm glad I heard you. I actually heard you say that on your show. That's really good.
Yeah.
One thing, you know, I don't know all the ins and outs of it, and to be honest with you, I'm still learning.
Yeah.
But I mean, I would consider myself a Christian. I've always considered myself a Christian. I mean, I was born and raised Catholic, and this is something I can talk about on the show if you want.
Good.
So, yeah. You know what? Let's just save it until we're on the air.
Okay. No, we're actually on right now.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't even realize.
That's okay, man. I probably should have been more clear.
Oh, no. It's okay. It's okay. It's not a problem. Yeah, man, we can start where, you know, go ahead if you want to ask the questions.
Yeah, I want to first talk about your awakening. How did you come from being a typical herd mind American like we all once were to knowing about the establishment lies, and then talk about your blog and your radio show?
Okay, yeah, that's a good place to start. I graduated high school in 2004, and I immediately went to college. I'm from Omaha, Nebraska, and I went to school in Nebraska. I went to college in Nebraska, University of Nebraska at Omaha, and I majored in international studies. And you know, I was a really good student. I always got really good grades. You know, I've always been sort of a responsible type student. You know, I've always been interested in learning, and you know, I've always really enjoyed reading and stuff like this. So, you know, I've always kind of had this intellectual type interest, I guess you could say. And you know, once I got into college and I kind of started thinking about the bigger picture and really thinking about politics and where the country was headed, and you know, what was really going on, because when I was in college, this is when, you know, the Iraq War was raging, the war in Afghanistan was raging, you know, 9/11 was, you know, 5 or 6, 7 years ago.
Right.
It was still a relatively recent event, and it still had, I mean, I think it still does have a lot of significance, and it's a huge event in American history, especially in the past 10 or 12 years. So, you know, I kind of became a skeptic. You know, I started reading. I really got trapped in this whole progressive, you know, leftist, you know, Jewish,
yeah,
sort of narrative. You know, I was reading Noam Chomsky, and I was watching Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, another Jew. I really was reading a lot of, I guess you could say, sort of libertarian type. See, I was sort of stuck in the whole libertarian and, you know, progressive. So the sort of the right wing and the left wing gatekeepers. You know, right. I was kind of caught with these people for a long time, at least while I was in college. And so, you know, I was very anti-war. You know, I guess I could say I was, you know, pro-Constitution, you know, that sort of perspective. And I moved out to California. I moved to San Diego, California, once I graduated. And as soon as I showed up out here, I ran into the San Diegans for 9/11 Truth.
Yeah.
And they actually have a pretty decent group out here. They've been around for a number of years, and they have a pretty good, you know, core group of activists or members that are, you know, that are dedicated to what they're doing, and they really organize a lot of events. And, you know, they're really, you know, sort of a tight-knit community. So I found out about this group, and basically it was like the first week I was in San Diego, I went to one of their meetings, and they screened, I think it was Loose Change. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Loose Change, and we watched it. And as soon as, you know, obviously Loose Change is a major, major gatekeeper 9/11 type movie. You know, it was made by, you know, Jason Burmess and the Loose Change guys and, you know, Alex Jones and that crowd.
Sure.
So they're definitely major gatekeepers, which I've come to, you know, I came to discover, you know, shortly after I saw this. But, you know, it woke me up big time to 9/11, because I never really thought about 9/11 as being an inside job or, you know, really even thinking critically about 9/11. I sort of just took it at face value. Even though I was against the wars and everything that 9/11, you know, led to, I didn't really question the event itself. And, you know, as soon as I watched that, I was convinced. I absolutely knew that 9/11 was no doubt an inside job. And my first thought was that 9/11 was done by some sort of criminal network that basically controlled the government. It wasn't necessarily the government. And I think that initial gut instinct was probably something really beneficial looking back on it, because a lot of people get stuck in, you know, Bush and Cheney and you know, the U.S. government, when the United States government and Bush and Cheney and even Obama and Biden and all these other politicians,
right.
These people are really just fronts. They're really just puppets for the people behind the scenes.
Yep.
And the people behind the scenes are no doubt about it. It's the Jews. It's the organized Jewish community. You know, and we can talk about that more as we go on here, but yeah, I mean, it really just kind of led me to start investigating some of these other events and, you know, just totally relearning history.
Yeah.
And, you know, rediscovering, you know, what we're doing in this world is, and, you know, what we're doing on this planet. And so, yeah, I mean, I kind of just took it from there. And, once you get into this, I mean, you got to do something about it. You know, you got to start a blog or a website or a radio show or something. So that's what I did. I started a blog, and I've been blogging since late 2010, I believe. So, you know, about 2 years or 2.5 years or whatever. So I've been doing that. And then I started doing radio. I actually participated in an Occupy Wall Street movement. I mean, it was Occupy San Diego, since I live out here in San Diego. I participated in an Occupy San Diego protest, and I was trying to get involved with the main people that were sort of organizing the whole Occupy San Diego movement. And, you know, I'm sure you've seen that video where I was up there talking about how the Jews did 9/11 and Israel was behind 9/11 and blah, blah, blah.
No, I haven't.
Oh, you haven't seen that?
No,
okay, well,
I think you know what? I found out about you listening to Jim Fetzer. You were on his show. And I thought, man, what a really passionate, young, articulate man. So that's how I found your blog. I think you referred to that. I think actually the podcast I listened to, you were saying that you were scheduled to speak at that, right? And was it canceled when you started speaking about Jews, or what happened?
Well, yeah. Let me. I'll give you just the nutshell.
Yeah, go ahead.
Version of what happened. So I went down. This would have been in November, or maybe October. It was like October, November of 2011, and this was right when the Occupy Wall Street thing got kicked off. So I was participating in this. I was trying to get involved with the movement, like I said, and there was a lot of people from the San Diegans for 9/11 Truth group. So I mean, there's two separate groups. There's the Occupy San Diego and then the San Diegans for 9/11 Truth group. A lot of the 9/11 Truth people were involved in the Occupy movement, so we were all kind of, you know, getting on board with this and seeing where we could take it and seeing if we could talk about 9/11 and stuff like that. So, I met a couple of the people that were in charge of the education committee. Now, the education committee was basically the people that were interested in presenting information and maybe potential, you know, maybe possibly leading a lecture or, you know, things of this nature within the whole Occupy, within the whole Occupy San Diego group. So I tried getting involved with this committee and, you know, it sounded like everything was cool. You know, I talked to the main people and they were totally fine with it. And I went down there the very next day. It turned out to be a Sunday. And we did this little protest and you know, like a march around downtown San Diego. I made a big, huge sign, a double-sided sign. And on one side of the sign, it said, "Arrest the Banksters." And I had some information about, you know, the Rothschilds and the Jews basically being behind the entire private, you know, criminal Federal Reserve banking system. And I had some quotes from like Thomas Jefferson and stuff like that. And then on the other side, I had the sign said Israel behind 9/11. And I was basically paraphrasing Dr. Alan Sobrowski. Now, Dr. Alan Sobrowski is a PhD from the University of Michigan. He was actually a U.S. Marine. So, I mean, he's a veteran. He served in the military. And he came out, this must have been, it must have been in 2011, early 2011, maybe late 2010. He came out and flat out said that Israel was behind 9/11 from start to finish. And this is when I really woke up to you know, Israel being behind 9/11. And I really woke up to the whole Jewish question in this whole, you know, new, quote unquote, new world order, you know.
Right.
So, you know, I started talking about this when I was down at Occupy San Diego, and I got up with a microphone. They were asking people if anybody wanted to make a speech or whatever. So I got up there and I started talking about the Federal Reserve and Wall Street. There were a bunch of criminals, and everybody was like cheering me in the crowd. There was maybe, you know, oh geez, I don't even know how many people. It couldn't have been more than 100 people or so. It wasn't a huge crowd, but you know. So everyone's cheering, and then I turn my sign around and I start talking about how Israel did 9/11 and, you know, the Jews control our government and all that. And as soon as I turned my sign around, I had somebody in the crowd start booing me, and everybody just got all pissed off and really turned off. And there were some people in the crowd that were kind of taking my side, but, you know, the people that were booing were kind of overwhelming things. And so I ended up, you know, leaving and I didn't participate.
Yeah.
With Occupy San Diego going forward, because they were obviously, you know, a bunch of shills. And so that's what happened with Occupy San Diego. I had been trying to do a presentation for the San Diegans for 9/11 Truth Group.
Yes.
For quite some time, and after this whole thing happened with Occupy San Diego,
okay,
I kind of had a falling out with a lot of these people, because a lot of these people were there and they saw this happened.
Yeah.
And they didn't even back me up. They didn't say anything. They actually took the people in the crowd side.
Wow.
So I was really disappointed. I was like, I was actually, you know, totally surprised, to be honest with you, because most of these people were, and they still are to a large extent. I mean, they are, you know, decent, honest, nice people, you know. They're not like some sort of agents or whatever, you know, like you always hear online. Yeah. You know, they're decent people. And so I was a bit disappointed, and I said, you know what, forget this group. All these people are totally compromised. They don't want to talk about the real issues.
Yeah.
They don't want to talk about Israel. They don't want to talk about the Jews. You know, they don't want to talk about these things.
And, you know, if you would have called out maybe the Catholics or Protestants or elitists or some other group, they would have had no problem. But it's when you call out the Jews, that's when you get blackballed, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Who was it, Voltaire, that said, ask not? Or ask who you cannot criticize, and that's where the real power resides. Or
yep, that's it.
That statement or that quote from Voltaire is absolutely 100% correct. I mean, who's the one group of people you absolutely cannot criticize without running into problems? And that's, yeah, of course, the Jews. I mean, you can talk about the Vatican, you can talk about the Knights of Malta, you know, like you said, you can talk about the globalists and the Illuminati and all these. You know, all these ghosts, basically. I mean, all these intangible poltergeists, as Zion Crime Factory likes to say.
Yeah.
They're basically just faceless enemies. So you're just running around in circles trying to figure out what's going on, when the whole time the Jews are the ones that are behind everything from start to finish. So, you know, I kind of was disillusioned with all the activist groups, and I didn't really talk to anybody for a while. And then it must have been in, you know, February or March of 2012, I got in contact with the San Diegans for 9/11 Truth Group again, and I asked them if they were interested in, you know, once again, me having a presentation. And I told them, I was like, look, I understand, you know, this is a very sensitive topic, and, you know, I'm not going to get up there and and start, you know, Sig Heiling and you know, praising Hitler and stuff like that. You know, I'm just going to talk about the fact that Israel did 9/11, and there's overwhelming proof to show this. There, I mean, it's just there's no question anymore. It's not really a debate. It's a fact. I mean, we could talk about it for 4 or 5 hours, you know. So they gave me another chance, and I did a little presentation at this coffee shop in San Diego. It wasn't like a main San Diegans for 9/11 Truth Group meetup. It was just like something I kind of organized on my own. And it was a decent turnout. I did a blog post on it. It was back in, I think it was either February or March, like I said, I can't remember. But if anybody goes back and looks at my blog in the archives, they can probably find it. Oh, I'm sure they can find it. It was at a coffee shop called Cafe Libertalia.
Okay.
The Hillcrest neighborhood of San Diego. And it was a good event. I mean, it went really well. I mean, it was basically a discussion with the audience and, you know, the crowd that came to hear me. And it went really well. I had some videos to play, and, you know, I made some good points, and you know, really, you know, it was fine. It went well. And then a couple months later, the main San Diegans for 9/11 Truth Group, they decided that they were going to let me give a presentation at their meetup group. And I was really excited. You know, I was preparing for this. You know, I did a lot of things. I was, you know, I have a job and stuff. And so I was, you know, doing a lot of stuff on my free time and really preparing for this and whatnot. And we sort of ran into a problem because the group didn't want me to use the word Jew in my presentation. And I didn't know what to think at first. I was like, okay, should I go along with this, or should I just tell them, look, I have to say Jew. I mean, I can't just do this without saying the word Jew. And so I got to the point where I was like, okay, look, guys, I have to use the word Jew. And it's not because I hate Jews or whatever. It's just because I have to accurately describe the people who did this, and I have to accurately describe the criminals who did this. And it kind of fell out from there. I went on the radio show you're talking about with Dr. Jim Fetzer. And this was, I believe this was in July. And after the group heard my radio show with Dr. Jim Fetzer, they canceled my speech. And, you know, ever since then, I've just.
That was the part that I picked up from listening to Fetzer. I knew that you had something planned. And then after they heard you on Fetzer, name names, they had enough of you, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. They're, well, it's really disappointing because, like I said, a lot of these people are actually, I mean, at least from my perspective, my experience with them, a lot of them, actually all of them, are good people. You know, they're honest people for the most part. You know, they really care about this stuff. They know, for instance, I mean, they know that Israel did 9/11.
Yeah.
They basically know everything that I'm saying is true. But they're still so timid, and they're still so afraid of offending people, and they're afraid of you know, this whole ridiculous anti-Semitism and this anti-Semitic label. You know, they're just so afraid about alienating people. Their main concern is not the truth.
Yeah.
Their concern is being, you know, socially acceptable. And that's, I mean, that we gotta knock this stuff off. I mean, this is ridiculous. This is childish, if you ask me. It's totally childish. No, I mean, I was just saying, you know, these people that run these 9/11 truth groups and these Occupy Wall Street groups and all these other anti-war groups and everything, I mean, they're just so totally cowardly, and they're so totally afraid of offending the Jews, of being, you know, labeled anti-Semitic or whatever. I mean, there's just this real fear in people, I feel like, and it's just, we got off. It's totally immature. It's totally childish. And, you know, I'm certainly not putting up with it anymore.
Yeah. Well, good for you, man. It doesn't sound like you have any fear. Let's get into the subject of PSYOPs. And just for our listeners, define what a PSYOP is, and then talk about a media PSYOP.
Okay. Yeah. This this is an important subject. A lot of people, for whatever reason, a lot of people don't want to talk about this stuff when it comes to 9/11 and some of these other events. But it's a subject that I think, well, it's really an aspect of how these false flag events are carried out and how they're really utilized to target the public's emotions and our feelings and, you know, really our minds. I mean, they are psychological operations. And, I did a blog post back in, this would have been February 19th, 2012. And, let me just mention this for your audience. If you go to my blog, johnfriendsblog.blogspot.com, if you scroll down, you know, you might have to scroll down it for a little bit, and you'll come to on the left-hand side of the page, there's a column titled 9/11 Research. And I have a number of different links to different articles, some of which that I've written, and some of them that are other people that have, you know, Dr. Jim Fetzer and some other 9/11 researchers have written. And I kind of get into this PSYOP stuff because I think, like I said, I think it is really important. And in this blog post, I just defined a PSYOP, and it was actually written by a major in the Army, Major Ed Rouse. And this is how he said it. I can just read it for you if you'd like.
Sure.
It says here, psychological operations, or PSYOP, are planned operations to convey selected information and indicators to audiences to influence their emotions, motives, objective reasoning, and ultimately the behavior of organizations, groups, and individuals. Used in all aspects of war, it is a weapon whose effectiveness is limited only by the ingenuity of the commander using it. So it's basically an operation that targets, you know, a public or a population's emotions. And it's really designed to influence their attitudes, their behaviors, and their emotions. I mean, that's basically what it is.
Yeah. Have you seen the post I did on tribaltheocrat.com? It's just a placeholder for our show where I have a picture of a helicopter dropping leaflets.
Oh, you know what? I actually didn't even.
It's if you go to tribaltheocrat.com, you'll see there's a post there. It says a John Friend on media psyops. But there's a picture I got off of the Wiki Commons of it's of the U.S. Army's 350th Tactical Psychological Operations 10th Mountain Division, and they're dropping leaflets over a village in Iraq. And of course, the message on the leaflets is to promote the idea of self-government to area residents. And I just thought, man, what chutzpah for us to go over there and invade them, occupy them, murder them, and then drop leaflets saying that we are all about self-government. Classic.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's exactly what they do. I mean, I think this is the most important aspect of any of these operations, because they're, it's so subtle and it's so powerful that people, you know, can't even come to grips with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so talk about a specific... We have PSYOPs, psychological operations. Talk about a media PSYOPs and then show how 911. Now, you believe 911 was a pure media PSYOP. Can you talk about that?
Well, you know, I'm still trying to figure it out, to be honest with you. I mean, one thing that I will say for sure, I think basically all of the video, well, maybe not all of it, but most of it, especially the video that was presented, you know, in the news, you know, the planes hitting the buildings, the people jumping from the towers, you know, many of the eyewitnesses that were alleged to have seen what happened in New York. These things are definitely part of the PSYOP aspect of 9/11. And I think pretty much all these videos are fake.
Yeah.
Somehow manufactured. They're definitely not genuine. You know, they're part and parcel of the PSYOP that was 9/11. And PSYOPs, I mean, really, PSYOPs, all they use, they use, it's face-to-face communication. They use television, you know, audio, media, visual media, like you said, with pamphlets or maybe posters or newspapers or whatever. So, I mean, they basically use information to attack psychologically the target audience. And we really saw that on 9/11. you know, with these videos of these planes, which we were told were filled with innocent Americans, you know, crashing into these buildings, it really induces a form of trauma, and this trauma creates, you know, this sort of manipulation of your mind, in my view, anyways. I think that's a good way to look at it. In fact, I did another blog post that might be interesting for people to read that I did is titled, let me actually find it real quick. It's right along these same lines. It's called 9/11 Trauma-Based Mind Control on a Societal Scale.
Yeah.
Because what they did with these videos, they induced the trauma with the plane hitting the building,
right,
with the people jumping out of the building. They're inducing this trauma, these horrible scenes, and it basically allows people to be psychologically manipulated. And you'll notice how on 9/11, right when this was happening, you had guys like Ehud Barak, the former Israeli prime minister. He was on the BBC saying that Osama bin Laden did 9/11 on the day of 9/11.
Right.
And he literally listed off a list of countries that the United States and the Western allies in NATO should invade and destroy and totally take over.
Yeah.
I mean, he's basically telling us who we're going to be fighting for the next, you know, 20, 30, however many years it's going to be. He specifically mentioned Iraq, Iran, Syria. All the countries that we've been either outright invading and destroying, or countries that, you know, we're in the process of, you know, invading and destroying. That's a key aspect of it. You know, they induce this trauma, and then they have their scripted actors, Ehud Barak, you know, other people. Jerome Hauer was another Jewish guy that was on TV on 9/11 telling everybody Osama bin Laden did it and Al-Qaeda did it, and there's these evil Muslims that did it.
Yeah, I've tried to get my hand around all of it, and there's so many different people saying different things. Were the jumpers real? Were the pictures on the media real victims? Some even say that they ask whether the Trade Center towers were even occupied, or whether they were hollow. And one thing I know is that the official account can't be true, just based on, you know, laws of physics and what your own eyeballs saw, and radio, what is it, Aburrado?
Right, yeah, yeah,
Those guys actually hold the position that the whole thing you saw, the whole live feed, was basically a Hollywood movie. It was special effects and actors and all this, and it was just made, it was pure media psyop. And I don't know, I haven't listened to their arguments, but are you familiar with that?
Yeah, you know, I've been listening to some of their shows, and yeah, you know, that's what I'm trying to figure out. I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know. I mean, what seems clear to me is that, for, you know, some basic facts. I mean, there was no hijackings on 9/11. That's all totally media manufactured. There, no planes hit any of the buildings in New York. No planes crashed into the Pentagon. There was no plane in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. The whole entire official narrative of 9/11 is really just it's really just a completely media manufactured narrative.
The Pentagon story is what got my interest piqued. In fact, I have a little audio clip here of the scumbag Jamie McIntyre, who is one of the first people at the Pentagon scene, and here's what he says early, and then he revises his statement.
From my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon. The only site is the actual site of the building that's crashed in. And as I said, the only pieces left that you can see are small enough that you could pick up in your hand. There are no large tail sections, wing sections, a fuselage, nothing like that anywhere around, which would indicate that the entire plane crashed into the side of the Pentagon and then caused the side to collapse. Now, even though if you look at the pictures of the Pentagon, you see that the floors have all collapsed. That didn't happen immediately. It wasn't until almost about 45 minutes later. And it's hard to see as we're playing it here. It's sort of stop action video. Again, very similar to the still frames we saw before. But when you run the video back and stop it, at one point you can see what appears to be the nose of the plane just entering the frame. The very next frame, there's an explosion. And then in the second angle, which is taken from another camera a little bit lower down, you can see what appears to be a white flash that also looks like the plane. But again, it's not going to be distinct enough to convince conspiracy theorists who still question whether a plane actually hit the Pentagon.
What a scumbag flip-flopping like that, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's that is really funny hearing that again. I mean, I've definitely seen that video or, you know, heard that, but yeah, it's funny. I mean, it's so ridiculous that anybody can actually believe the official story. I mean, think about how absurd it is. A hijacked airliner crashes into the Pentagon. Are we serious? I mean, this is.
And then there's it was that got my interest peaked. And then it was the Building 7 collapse and oh my word. Have you seen controlled demolitions? If you've seen a controlled demolition, you've seen the Building 7 collapse. That was a classic controlled demolition, a building falling into its shadow. It had no jet based fuel fires. It wasn't even hit by any planes. And it comes down at the speed of free fall, right into its shadow.
Yeah, exactly. Now this is something that these guys over at what is it, Aberrato or whatever?
Yeah, Radio Aberrato. Yeah,
Radio Aberrato, and then you know some of the guys on September Clues, who have done a lot of the research into you know the media fakery and you know the fact that all the videos that we saw of the planes hitting the towers, how these are all fake. These guys, some of them are contending that even the video of Building 7 coming down is fake. And, I mean, I'm no video expert by any means. I mean, if you just sit down, if any just honest observer sits down and goes back and watches some of the video of 9/11, you know, some of the news broadcasts and some of the videos of the planes and stuff, you can tell it's fake. I mean, if you sort of... if you're looking for anomalies or sort of, you know, have this perspective that, okay, maybe some of these videos might be faked. If you go back and look at them, obviously they are. I mean, I don't know how anybody honestly looking at any of this stuff could come to a different conclusion. But I don't know. I mean, I just don't know. I don't know if all the videos are fake.
How do those guys maintain that 7 came down then?
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, I think basically what they're saying, and you know, I don't know. I'd actually like to talk to these guys about this because I think they're probably on the right track. I don't know exactly.
Yeah, because I've heard them say that they say, look, we obviously believe that the buildings did come down. We just don't believe that what you saw live was happening in real life. I just wonder how they explain how the buildings came down.
Yeah, you know, I don't know either, and that's something I'd like to get one of those guys on my show or maybe come on one of their shows and talk more about this because I would like to hear hear them kind of clarify their position. But basically, just listening to some of their shows and stuff, what they're saying is that yeah, basically that the entire everything we saw on 9/11 was totally fake. It was all just sort of manufactured before the event even happened in real life, apparently.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, I'm willing to entertain the idea. I'm not outright dismissing it. I think it's interesting. I think it might actually explain some things that can't be explained otherwise. But you know, I just don't know. Now, one of the things I find interesting is that, and this is something that I wasn't even really aware of, or at least I didn't really grasp the significance of it. And that's the fact that there was like 9 buildings that were completely destroyed on 9/11.
Yeah, I saw some aftermath pictures and there were big, huge cookie cutter holes in a lot of those surrounding buildings. But I didn't know that 9 had come down. That's quite impressive.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know what to make of that. I mean, I don't know how they did it. I don't know. Yeah. I just don't know. I mean, it's really a tough nut to crack, you know, when you're looking at it. I mean, what's clear to me is that there was definitely scripted actors in place ready to, you know, perpetuate the official story and really perpetuate this on the American public. I mean, think about it. What were the most promoted aspects of 9/11 back then, you know, on the day it happened and in the weeks leading, you know, the weeks afterwards, it was the hijackers, the hijacking victims, you know, it was the victims in the towers. And September Clues has investigated a lot of these victims, and they've concluded that they're completely fraudulent. And I think these guys are right about it. I think a lot of the victims on 9/11 are totally fraudulent.
Could be.
Most of them, if not all of them, are totally fraudulent.
It's incredible.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a huge aspect of these psyops. And this is another point I like to make when I talk about this stuff. Most people are familiar with Operation Northwoods, right?
Right.
And for those that aren't, Operation Northwoods was basically a Pentagon-created covert plan. Basically, a Pentagon-created plan to stage a false flag event.
Yeah.
And just to get the United States, you know, a justification for the United States to invade Cuba. And this was back in the Kennedy administration. And John F. Kennedy totally, you know, denied this and totally dismissed this this plan. He didn't want to go forward with it. But if you read Operation Northwoods, if you read the actual document, and you can read it online, just do a Google search for it, they specifically talk about using the media to create victims to sell to the American public to justify the invasion of Cuba.
Yeah.
So basically they say they go to the media and they write up a report. Oh, you know, 20 Americans died, you know, after Cuba attacked an American ship. And really the whole thing is made up. There were no people that died. But the idea that Americans died, you know, or were murdered, that this creates this this justification and this you know, this sort of it just establishes a means for the United States to do what they do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and 9/11's a great example because the justification that Bush offered for invading Iraq, he had two or three grounds, and each one of them were provably false. Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with it. They had no weapons of mass destruction, but yet the American people still didn't challenge Bush, and it was precisely because of that emotional connection they felt when they saw the buildings come down. It actually reminds me of a quote from Kevin Costner playing Garrison in JFK. And back there, he's talking about the assassination of JFK and the magic bullet theory, and I think I've got it memorized. He says, the glitter of the official lies and the thought-numbing funeral of JFK confuse the eye and confound the understanding. And that it's that principle right there that applies to media psyops. There's something on TV we see, and it just confounds the eye and confuses the understanding. And of course, the glitter of the official lies blinds just about everybody. I always love that quote by Garrison.
Yeah, no, that's a great quote, and that's actually a great movie. I've seen that movie a couple times, and I think it's actually pretty good. Although, obviously, they don't get it to the whole Mossad connection. But, anyways, yeah, I mean. The role of victims in these psyops, the role I see the role of victims and the use of manipulated or somehow faked video to convey these or to perpetuate these psyops, and the use of scripted actors.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say what I mean by actors. I don't necessarily mean, you know, like a Hollywood actor. I just mean somebody that is given talking points or somebody that's given, you know, a script, and they're put in front of the camera and this is what they're supposed to read.
Yeah.
And these are the points that they're supposed to make. And of course, all these points and the script that they're reading go perfectly in line with what the perps want the public to think, right?
Yeah. This is a good segue into Sandy Hook. I've heard you talk a lot about Sandy Hook and how it was a media fakery. Talk about what you've uncovered by investigating that whole ordeal.
Yeah, absolutely. As soon as this whole Sandy Hook thing happened, I mean, obviously, I'm really suspicious when anything happens or anything that's really hyped in the media. You know, I'm always suspect of it.
Yeah.
And you know, the day it happened, it was a Friday. You know, I was at work, you know, I was busy all day. So I sort of knew what happened, and I was reading some of the mainstream reports about it. And I remember I went on Facebook, and all of my friends on Facebook were just completely devastated, right? They were totally devastated with the thought that all these children were murdered, and you know, they were, you know, some of them were even calling for gun control and stuff already. I mean, they really fell right into the perps, you know, right into what they were trying to do. And yeah, I mean, I just started investigating it. I mean, obviously the official story falls apart right away. You know, there was reports of multiple shooters. They couldn't get Adam Lanza's story straightened out. They couldn't get his mother's story straightened out. I mean, there's basically all these holes in the official story. And looking back on it, I think they actually do this just to confuse people, especially when they do these like totally fake events, because I do think Sandy Hook was totally fake. I don't think that there's any reason for anybody to believe that these children really did die.
Whoops. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Okay. I was going to say, I don't think that there's any reason for anybody to believe that any of these teachers died. I think the whole thing was basically staged. It was a totally media manufactured event. And if you look, what really did it for me, I started watching some of the interviews that some of the alleged parents of the children that died. I started watching some of these videos on CNN and ABC, and it's just totally phony. It's absolutely phony. It's not. There's no way these people are genuine. I don't care what angle you look at this from. I mean, everybody's probably seen that Robbie Parker video where he's, you know, basically getting into his character to get on camera. And
yeah, that was a total joke. I couldn't believe such a guy. He just loses his daughter, and then there he is having. Hold on, can you hear some feedback?
Yeah, just for a minute, but it's okay now.
He has a good laugh and chuckles, and then 2 seconds later, he's getting into character and sobbing over his daughter. I thought that was. Wow, what's going on there?
Yeah,
and then
absolutely.
there's some other oddities. In the Aurora, Colorado shooting, you had I think 71 people shot, and then only 12 died, which is an 83% survival rate. With Sandy Hook, 96% of the people who were shot died. That's an outrageous fatality rate. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, it's totally ridiculous any way you look at it, at least the official narrative. But yeah, if you take a look at that Robbie Parker video, I think you're clearly going to see a scripted actor that was basically set up to play this role in the Sandy Hook PSYOP. And also you'll notice that his daughter, Emily, her name is Emily, E-M-I-L-I-E?
I'm not sure.
Either way, I can't remember exactly how you spell it, but basically the last part of Emily is L-I-E, Emily.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know the significance of that, but I mean, that was something that stood out to me. I was like, wow, why is her name spelled Emily?
Yeah.
Is this girl lying? Is she a made-up person? You know, who is this girl? And then after I saw that, I actually wrote a blog post that it's gotten a lot of traffic. I've gotten like 8,000 views of it since I wrote it, which is a lot for my blog. and it's called Calling Bullshit on the Sandy Hook Hoax.
Yeah, I read that.
Yeah, and I link to a lot of these videos of these actors, of these fake parents, you know, reading the script and promoting these talking points about their children. And if you notice, they all have the same, you know, sob story about how their beautiful child and all their child wanted was peace on earth and all this crap.
Yeah.
I mean, it's totally fake. It's all totally fake.
Yeah, even one, I forget the parent, one parent gets on some media channel and says, my daughter's, you know, she wanted there to be some gun legislation to so that the guns could only be in the hands of military and law enforcement. And if you wanted to go hunt, you could go get a gun from the government. I thought, wow, that's a pretty quick talking point to have about destruction of the Second Amendment.
See, exactly. You're making such a good point here, because you'll see how all the victims, I mean, even when you look at 9/11, all of these alleged victims somehow promote.
Hey, John.
Oh, yeah.
1 second. I'm having some feedback issues. Are you hearing that?
Yes.
Pardon?
Yes, I can hear that, definitely.
Yeah, I don't know what that's coming from. Hold on a sec.
Okay. It sounds like it's like clicking or something.
It might have been my, it could have been my cell phone was too close to my soundboard, because now it went away.
Okay, yeah.
So now go ahead and make your point.
Well, okay, so my point was, you'll notice how many of the victims, the alleged victims, and they're in their family members or whoever is speaking on their behalf afterwards, whether we're talking about Sandy Hook or 9/11, you'll notice how many of these people somehow promote the official theory, or they somehow promote the agenda, right? The gun control agenda, or the 9/11 agenda. I mean, for instance, there was a 9/11 family that sued the Iranian government, and they were claiming that Iran was behind 9/11. I mean, this is how these alleged victims are used.
Wow.
Used to not only advance the official government conspiracy, but they're also used to advance the other, the other agendas that they have, whether it's gun control with the case in Sandy Hook, or also with Sandy Hook, we're seeing a huge push for mental health services.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's one of the huge talking points. In fact, I read something today about how that Jew Senator Feinstein is trying to push for a law that would require, that would take away the rights for someone to carry or get a concealed carry permit if they have had prescription drugs in the past, such as SSRIs and psychotropic drugs. So,
yeah, you'll notice that there's victim family members of the Sandy Hook hoax that are promoting this exact same narrative. I mean, one thing that really did it for me also is when you looked at all of the official pronouncements, whether it was Obama, whether it was, any senator or representative in Congress, whether it was, local Connecticut officials, state Connecticut officials, everybody had the same exact talking points. Even people in the media, even people in the mainstream, Jewish-owned media, they all had the same exact talking points. And all their talking points were gun control, violent video games, mental health services, psychiatric drugs, things of this nature. They all had the same agenda. That's how you know these things are staged.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to say what exactly happened, but we know the official story. It just crumbles the more you look at it. In fact, even the news feed from the helicopter showed this guy running out into the woods, the shooter, and the cops are chasing him. So here's a second shooter. And then some other shooter was in camo pants and a black top, and he was handcuffed, and he told the parents as he walked by, "I didn't do it." So here are three shooters. One's dead, and the media doesn't ever make good on those other two shooters, doesn't even bring up who they were, why they were there, why one was running. You've got that Joker pathologist saying that all the kids were killed with the .223 rifle, but the official account was that he only had some pistols on him and that rifle was in the car. This makes no sense. No one's asking the big questions, because if you ask the questions, John, you're insulting these precious kids who died, and that's the game right there, is to play on your emotions.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's okay.
I had my mic on mute. No, that is what you just said right there. That is the critical point. And that's, we can't offend the victims. We can't question the government, because all these innocent children were murdered. We have to take away the guns, because there's all these crazy lone gunmen out there that are going to walk into a school and shoot it up and blah, blah, blah. I mean, yeah, this is such a huge part of these psyops. And the thing about this whole Sandy Hook thing is they did it so blatantly obvious.
Yeah.
So many people are waking up to this, I feel like. I mean,
it makes you wonder if they're trying to just to see what they can get by with, is if they're flaunting it in our face or something, because it was a pretty sloppy job.
I think you're right. And I also think some of the stories they put out, like all these the two shooters that escaped and stuff like this. I think some of this stuff, I mean, I don't know. This is just sort of my, you know, my conjecture or whatever. I think a lot of this stuff might be just disinfo.
Yeah.
Just to keep people chasing, you know, all these different rabbit holes. When the whole entire thing was just a complete hoax from start to finish.
Yeah. It's really, John, it's hard to know what to believe when you're dealing with facts that come through the TV. I made up my mind years ago to get rid of the TV. I think it's complete propaganda. It's disinformation. That's our enemy. When you watch TV, you're watching your enemy. And that's our next point, is just the TV in general as mind control. What do you think about TV? Do you watch TV? Do you encourage people to watch TV?
Oh, absolutely not, yeah. Man. I don't watch any TV. Well, I will say this. I do have a TV. I don't pay for cable.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even have any basic channels on my TV. I basically have a cord that I can hook up my computer, and, you know, I can watch YouTube videos, or yeah, I can put DVD or whatever. So, no, I don't watch TV. I think television is total Talmudic filth.
Yeah.
Or it's just total psyops. It's all total, government promoting psyops. I mean, it's either one or the other. It's either disgusting, degenerate Jewish filth, or it's total government, pro-government propaganda. So, yeah, television is absolutely the number one enemy in my view. I mean, television and just our mainstream Jewish culture in general is, yeah, it's just got to go.
I had Tom Hengist on a couple days ago to talk about National Socialism and the Third Reich, and at the end of the show, I always ask my guests, what do we do to go forward? And he says, if we ever have a Fuhrer to rise and to lead our people back into sanity, the first thing he's going to have to do is to shut down or to take control over mass media. We have to get people off that drug, because there's no way you can have a victory with television.
Well, I'll tell you that. Yeah, no, that's a huge point, and you're absolutely right. I mean, there's no way that anybody that watches television is ever going to wake up to what's going on. They're it's not going to happen. I mean, we're at a point now where we cannot trust anything that's being presented on television. And I mean, this has been the case for a long time now. I mean, I'm not sure if you're familiar with, all the different, photo fakery with involved in the Holocaust, for instance.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they've completely faked photographs of allegedly, murdered Jews and stuff. I mean, the Holocaust was like the main psyop. Not the main one, but, well, I mean, yeah, I guess it would be the main one, at least in the past 100 years. I mean, the Holocaust is a huge psyop. The whole Apollo moon landing stuff, that's all a big psyop. I don't know if you know anything about that, but from what I've looked into, that all that's totally staged. It's all a big fraud. I mean, the JFK assassination, the Zapruder film is fake. I mean, it's a fake video. They manufactured it. What we've seen with the Zapruder film does not depict what actually happened in the JFK assassination.
Yeah, I've listened to Dr. Fetzer on that, and he seems to be the authority on that matter. And he makes some pretty good points about that. That film is deliberately trying to get you to focus on A so that you will forget about B. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And it took me a long time to realize what these guys were saying about the film.
How did you ever get on Fetzer's show, by the way? That's quite an accomplishment.
You know, I actually, I emailed him, or I can't remember. I know I used to leave a lot of comments on his blog posts and stuff. And then I emailed him, and I let him know that I was going to be giving a presentation in San Diego.
Okay.
And I told him I was a little bit nervous about it, and, maybe I could talk to him about it. And he was like, well, actually, I suggested maybe we could do a show about it to kind of help me prepare for it.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
He was like, yeah, let's do it. And so he invited me on, like, I think I emailed him on like a Monday, and I was on a show on Wednesday. So, I mean, he like did it like right away.
Did you hear that recent show that I think it's on the last one on his blog, where he was interviewed by some Jew, and the purpose was to talk about 911. And right off the bat, this Jew starts mistreating him and trying to paint him as a, wacko, conspiracy wacko. And he tries to pull the old Holocaust card on him and asks Jim what he believes about the Holocaust. He was a complete shill trying to trap Jim. And man, Fetzer was as sharp as I've ever seen him, and he was quite good. You should listen to that.
I'm really glad to hear that, because I actually was a little bit... Well, I interviewed Fetzer on my show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I interviewed him on my show. He was like my third guest. I've only been doing my show for about maybe 2 months now, maybe a little bit more than 2 months. And by the way, anybody that's interested, I actually just got done doing a show tonight. I interviewed Dr. Rebecca Carley.
Yeah.
And I did a show tonight. I'm broadcasting over at the Truth Militia Radio, which is on Blog Talk Radio. And the name of my show, I actually just came up with the name of the show like within the past like 2 or 3 days. It's called The Realist Report.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so that's the name of my show. I broadcast on Mondays. I'm going to try to do maybe a show on a Saturday afternoon every once in a while if I can arrange it or you know, if it works with my schedule. But I generally broadcast on Monday evenings. And I had Dr. Fetzer on my show back on November 19th. And I invited him on to talk about 9/11 and the JFK assassination. And if you go to that comment section of that of the blog post that I put up, you know, kind of announcing the show and posting the show, there's actually a pretty good discussion about, you know, Fetzer's view on Zionism versus, you know, the Jews or Zionism versus Judaism, where my perspective, and this is something that I've told Jim about and we've talked about it. You know, when I was on a show, we even talked about it. My perspective is that Zionism is really just one ideological branch of Judaism, and it's really just part of the problem. It's not the problem. I mean, granted, it is a huge part of the problem, especially now, you know, in the day and age we're living in.
Right.
We've had a Jewish problem since, you know, what, 6,000 years ago? I mean, we've always had a Jewish problem. I mean, the Jews killed Jesus Christ. You know, the Jews have killed and demonized basically every white patriot that stood up to Jewish power.
Yep.
Look at Adolf Hitler. Look at, you know, even John F. Kennedy to a certain extent. I mean, that's probably a little bit, you know, more debatable. But, I mean, I would contend that Kennedy was, you know, I think he was a good guy. At least he was a genuine guy.
What does Fetzer say about that? Does he agree that the Jews have been after Christians and after whites?
Well, no, he doesn't. He gets stuck. He still gets stuck in this whole Zionism thing.
Yeah.
And if you go to that comment section, just go to my blog on November 19th and read some of the comments. And,
okay.
And, yeah. And now his views may have changed since then. I mean,
his approach on the Holocaust is basic is good. It's generic, but it's good enough. He says that, look, if responsible research is done on the Holocaust, and if it's true, then the responsible research will confirm it. If it's not true, then responsible research will tell us that too. So we should have no laws on you know, thought crime. So that's good enough. But I've always wondered what he thought about the more detailed questions about the historic position of Jews. Is, I mean, my goodness, they've been kicked out of how many European nations? They're always fouling up cultures and enslaving people with usury. This is not a Jesuit problem, a Catholic problem, a Knights of Malta problem. It's a Jewish problem.
Absolutely. You're 100% correct. And, you know, just another another article I'd like to just bring up here that I wrote. I wrote an article titled Organized Jewry, Destroyers of Western Civilization. And I kind of just go through and talk about how the Jews are the ultimate destroyers. I mean, if you look at what they promote, they're always behind all the wars. They're certainly behind, you know, the degenerate filth we see in our media. They're behind usury. They're behind, you know, the whole criminal private central banking system. I mean, they're behind pornography. They're behind basically every destructive, you know, endeavor one can engage in. And they always have been. That's the thing. It's not something that just happened, you know, 10 years ago. They've always been this way. It's in their blood. That's how they are. You know, at least in my perspective, yeah. I mean, that's the only logical conclusion I can come to at this point.
They have a very unique history, and I don't know how anybody could deny it. It's quite clear that, well, I talked about earlier on the show before you came on, I was trying to dispel this myth that Christianity is Jewish, because I was distinguishing the Bible from the Talmud, and most Christians are really blind about this they don't even have any clue about what the Talmud teaches about Mary and Jesus and what it teaches about Gentiles. It's a disgusting document, and that is their religious authoritative text, and no one knows about it.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the Talmud actually depicts Jesus boiling in shit, basically.
Yeah, yeah, hot excrement. It's disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly a very anti-Christian, anti-Christ book. And I mean, it's a book that teaches that the Jews are here to rule the world. They're here to corrupt and deceive and cheat and defraud non-Jews.
Yeah.
And I think that's their behavior has clearly, this has been demonstrated with their behavior over centuries. I mean, we can see it right now in front of our face, obviously, but you know, this is something that they've always been up to. They've always been, this group of people have always engaged in this type of behavior. It shouldn't surprise you to recognize that when you read the Talmud and you see the Talmud is you know, specifically calling for these types of things, yeah. Right?
It is. It's not hard to do the math and put two and two together. I want to try to wrap this up in 90 minutes. I've got about 9-10 minutes left. I've got a low battery on my portable recorder. So I want to get your thoughts on religion. Where are you currently? You mentioned Christian identity theology. Is that where you are?
Well, you know, I just keep an open mind, to be honest with you. I mean, I told you before the show started, or maybe we were even on the air. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think we were.
I think, you know, I was raised Catholic, and, you know, I would consider myself a Christian. I mean, I certainly don't think that, I think that Christianity is basically, or organized Christianity has basically been corrupted from the beginning. I mean, I think the Catholic Church has been corrupted from the very beginning, although the Catholic Church has done some important things over the centuries and whatnot. And I think that the Jews have totally subverted our history and our culture, and they've really subverted Christianity and turned it into this. They've basically turned mainstream Christianity into into a branch of Judaism. I don't think that, I think that that's absolutely 100% crystal clear. But I mean, for instance, I've interviewed Bill Fink, and I've interviewed Eli James, and these are guys that come from the Christian identity perspective.
Yeah.
You know, I'm an honest guy. I'm not sitting here trying to act like I know everything, and you know, I'm not sitting here trying to, you know, just dismiss people because it doesn't jive with what other people are saying. I'm honestly trying to figure this stuff out on my own, and I've listened to and read some of the stuff that Eli and Bill Fink have put out about the Bible, and about who the people are in the Bible, and about the history of the European peoples and where my ancestry comes from. And I'm going to be honest with you. I think these guys basically have it right. I mean, I don't know all the ins and outs, and you know, I couldn't sit here and explain it all to you, but I think that they're on the right track, and I think that there is a lot of truth in what they're saying, specifically about who the people in the Bible are.
You'll have to send me that stuff. I've not heard of those guys, but I'd be interested in looking at it.
Yeah, I interviewed. I asked Bill Fink to come on my show to specifically talk about Mein Kampf and Adolf Hitler.
Yeah.
And the only way for him to really explain that is to kind of explain, you know, his perspective of Christianity, and that's fine. I had no problem with that. And that was on December 3rd, and then on December 10th, the very next week, I interviewed Eli James, who's another Christian identity pastor. And in that, we really just kind of talked about the basics of Christian identity, you know, what they're contending, you know, their perspective of the Bible and things of that nature. So it's really kind of a, you know, kind of a Christian identity 101 type show for anybody yeah. interested.
Okay, I'll have to check that out. Yeah, my site is, we use the word kinist, and that's simply a, think of a white nationalist who is a Christian, so somebody who has a theological justification for their white advocacy. And in fact, love of your race was something that was common in Christianity up until the 50s or 60s, when you had social Marxism taking over and Martin Luther King and his theology. And I have to agree with you that most of organized Christianity is corrupt. It's like many institutions, John, it's been co-opted by the Jews, and it's hard to stomach a lot of the stuff that comes out of the church. So I definitely can see the arguments there. But we are, and I've got a site, you know, tribaltheocrat.com. There's a Facebook page called Christianity for Kenism. There's a great site called Spirit, Water, Blood. I would definitely bookmark that one, spiritwaterblood.com. I had a guy on 2 days ago, Tom Hingest. He writes for firstword.us. Those are sites that share my theology. We are Reformed Protestant Christians. And, the important thing to do is to try to distinguish the Christianity that is based on the biblical worldview and one that's not, one that is co-opted by Jews and so forth. But yeah, I didn't want to have you on here to try to convert you or anything. I just wanted to give you a fair shake at talking about where you are, and we can always continue the dialogue about religion and stuff. And at least you agree with me that these anti-religious Christian bashers that come on your website really are disgusting. It really upsets me to see that kind of scorched earth Alex Linder approach toward Christianity.
Well, first off, let me just thank you for inviting me on your show. I appreciate it, and I appreciate all the work you're doing. I'm definitely going to start following your radio programs a lot more closely, because I think our sort of ideologies or worldviews kind of align in a lot of ways. And I think you're exactly right. I mean, I don't mind if somebody has a criticism of Christianity or the Catholic Church or whatever.
Yeah.
But the way it's done, I mean, you're almost treated like, you know, if you actually subscribe to the Bible, or if you're actually interested in learning about Jesus and interested in pursuing what Christian identity is, I mean, you're just absolutely demonized. And, everybody just says that Christianity is this Jewish, religion. And it's absolutely not. I mean, anybody that's read the New Testament can see that. And anybody that studies Jewish history understands that the Jews have always been diametrically opposed
to Christianity. That's it. Yep.
To real Christianity. And I think real Christianity is an understanding, is a racial understanding, is a a cultural and sort of a nationalist understanding, rather than this sort of universalist evangelical perspective that mainstream Jewish Christianity presents, right?
Yeah, there's certainly a racial component, and that's what we do. That's what Kenists are about. We take Orthodox Christianity. I don't mean Eastern Orthodox, but just Orthodox confessions and the right creeds that come from the Bible, and we bring back into that a tribal understanding that God divided us by races and tribes, and He did not mean for us to mix and amalgamate. That's a Jewish agenda, and you'll hardly find any Christians talking like this, but this was the faith of Europe. This was the faith of Christendom, and those blogs I mentioned earlier are definitely worth checking out. And like I said, we can continue to discuss it in the future. But I wanted to have you on because I really like your passion, and I like how you're moderate in tone, you're objective, and I just appreciated that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And to be, I'm not trying to bullshit anybody. I mean, I'm just an honest guy trying to figure this stuff out. And once you understand what's going on, you can't just sit around and act like everything's cool. You got to speak your mind and take a stand and stand up for what you believe in. And yeah, I appreciate you having me on. It's been an interesting conversation. We'll have to do this again one of these days. This went by really quick.
it did. It's amazing how it goes by so quickly. And do in fact check out that podcast on National Socialism and the Third Reich by Tom Hingest. It was a really good one. I was so happy to have him on 2 days ago.
Well, let me say this real quick before we get off air.
Yeah.
I think it's absolutely clear that Adolf Hitler was a Christian. And I think, many of the people in the National Socialist Party were certainly influenced by Christianity. Maybe they weren't Christians in the mainstream sense that we would think, but they were definitely influenced by Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that these people were occultists and all this other nonsense. I think that's all a bunch of disinfo. And I really get a lot of inspiration from Adolf Hitler because he was an absolute patriot. He was an absolute nationalist. And, he was really a man of integrity and a man of honesty. And that's what I'm trying to aspire to do. So,
well, good for you. We'll definitely keep in touch. And I'll wrap up the show, and maybe you can stay on, and I'll wrap up with you just for a few minutes after we go off air. Thanks for joining us, guys. This is TribalTheocrat.com with my special guest, John Friend. Check out his blog at johnfriendsblog.blogspot.com. Thanks.